Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 374. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Wow, what a build-up.
Yeah, I wanted to make him, I just wanted to be more dramatic.
And isn't it just a lovely morning?
It is. It is. It's my bride's birthday today, so that's...
I was going to say, it's a lovely morning on what should be a national holiday, right?
Yeah, right. Well, it's her birthday season, which means I have to celebrate it for her day after day after day for, I don't know, a week.
I feel your pain, brother.
Yeah.
Been there.
Yeah. Well, speaking of birthdays, no, it's not a good segue.
Not a good segue at all. But
today we have a very special guest on.
Yep, and we'll be talking with Mark Wilkie, who's the CTO, former CTO of BuzzFeed, and also the new CTO of the Who's Driving app, which released a couple weeks ago.
Fantastic. He seems like a good guy. I don't know him, but
you will find out.
You just say nice things about him, Phil. So my expectations are really high.
Okay.
All right. But man, the Minnesota Cup. The eight division winners in the high tech division, it was our friends at Vugo.
Yeah.
That we had on
former guests. Yeah, guests of the Minivate Gang. Yeah.
That's right.
You come on the Minivate Gang, you might be a Minnesota Cup winner. You never know.
It's true.
Yeah. Could happen. It's happened before.
I haven't done the math. I don't know if we've had any other Minnesota Cup winners.
No, I think this is the first one. Yeah.
I think so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, there were some other companies on here. Only one of them I knew, and that's that Eden Prairie Activated Research Company. And I mean, I don't really know them. I know of them, but didn't really know a lot of the winners. So it's kind of fun to learn about them as well. So,
yep, and good luck to all of them because they're still competing for the grand prize.
That's right.
We'll know that in a couple weeks. So that'll be good.
Part of that prize is being on the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh no, it's not
$50,000.
That's right.
And bragging rights.
Yep. Well, I came across something that I wanted to bring up on the podcast because it was Business Insider, which I always take with a grain of salt as I do its Silicon Valley Insider brother site, and yet they talked about this group of white hat hackers in Minnesota called Red Team Security, and there was a video about this device that was this little tiny $35 box that would allow you to connect it to a network and you own the network. And so
it's a Raspberry Pi with some of their software on it,
correct.
Which they give away for free on their GitHub, which is mighty nice of them.
Yeah.
So is this a good thing, you guys? I mean, you're basically handing out access to malware. Is that really a great idea? I know it's for testing purposes, but
it's good.
It's for pen testing, penetration testing. So.
Yeah, it's good for IT guys.
Yeah, yeah. So the only thing that I would say is, I mean, that's really their direction. It's all about security consulting, and I didn't know about these guys, and of course I've got to send them a note to say, you know, your background image is 3.5 megabytes on your website, so you probably want to change that, make that a little smaller. But I had never heard of these guys, you know, and as security boy, I should know more. Wow. But it looks like they're doing some good stuff. You know, they do penetration testing of networks and applications and, you know, physical pen testing and social engineering stuff and so on. So,
yeah. Interesting indeed.
Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting to me that, I know you have to do it to test things, but then to say, okay, well, here's access so you can, get into computers and inject malware. Malware.
Yeah. I had some issues with that. I just, you know, the one thing that, I've been doing, mainly because I have so many family and friends on Facebook, is putting stuff up about, you know, upgrading your machine, or, you know, I know a lot of people with Android devices, and, you know, when stuff happens, I'm posting it. And it's because once it's out in the wild, then, you know, some 14-year-old in his mom and dad's basement is going to get one and maybe stop over at somebody's office and plug it in just to see what happens. And now he owns the network. You know, so there's stuff like that. I mean, it just having it out in the wild is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, that's so, kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, there's plenty more software like this that's out there that is truly made for hackers. So,
yeah, I know it is. I know.
Anyway.
Yeah. But we're advertising this one. Good Lord.
Well,
what are we doing?
Well, no, we're not. It's out there, so who cares? they're a Minnesota company, so I,
you know. I understand. Yeah. I think it's a story. I agree.
So
and then, let's see. This is I'm not sure, you know, why we're addressing it, but it is sort of, it's social media related. I guess,
right? Is that what addressing it. That's a good one.
Oh, get it. Oh, so, but the whole kerfuffle with CJ commenting on Jenna Shortle's jeans.
Yeah, CJ is the, for those listening, if you don't know, she's the gossip columnist for the Star Tribune.
Yeah, soon to be a former gossip columnist.
Yeah.
I don't know. Steve and I exchanged comments on Facebook on this, and Steve's willing to give her a pass, and he's a magnanimous man, so it's God love him for that. But, you know, it's, and I thought about it a little bit, and it's really not much different than the way people comment, without hesitation on just about anything online. And that got me thinking, is there really a need for a gossip columnist anymore with social media? Is there really a need?
Well, I'm not really sure. All I know is that I remember 3 years ago or 4 years ago being at Costco in Eden Prairie, and this couple was trying to decide on a watermelon. And I looked at her, and there's this huge tall guy, and I looked at this woman, and I thought there was a flash of recognition. So I was talking to him about how you thump on the watermelon to see if it's ripe, based on the echo and so on.
That man was Abe Lincoln.
No, it was Kim Kardashian and her former husband, who lived in Chanhassen, the basketball player, forget his name now. And I tweeted it. Yeah.
Really, Kim Kardashian?
Yes. And
I remember this story. Yeah.
Yeah. So CJ ended up finding out about it, and she reached out to me and asked if she could call me. And anyway, so we talked, and then I was in CJ's column. So the only person that thought it was hilarious was my dad. And I thought, he's like one of the only people that read it. So anyway.
Well, that was back in the day.
This is a non-story. It's a, you know, if we didn't have Twitter, this would be a non-story.
Yeah, probably.
Who cares CJ's opinion is about the jeans?
That's what I'm saying, is I think that, you know, again, there's, you know, I personally think she's you know, I don't know. She's,
she has
she's
a quirky a style. She has a quirky style.
She's a bully.
Shanna does. But, and she's rocking
that's
it.
My,
more power to her.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, it was all about the, you know, taking away from the unbelievably sad Jacob Wetterling story. And it was deferring from that.
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of those things. But I just think that, I just don't think there's a need for it anymore.
So, yeah.
Well, it's not like she planned it. I mean, you know, she got dressed long before the breaking news.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm not talking Jana. It's just CJ and the existence of a gossip columnist anymore. I just don't think you need it. When I first got to Minneapolis, I remember CJ's column drove readership. That was a lot of the time the first thing everybody looked at.
Right.
And I think that, you know, as social media has risen, just like it's, you know, put the crush on actual print news. I mean, it really kind of means that there's really no need for these sorts of columnists anymore.
Yeah.
All right.
But
fine.
That's what I think anyway.
That's good.
God.
Good. That's
well, let's then segue to a story that has more to do with technology, which is a really good article in Twin Cities Business about filling the STEM pipeline, about the Minnesota High Tech Association and state government and private companies providing hundreds of paid internships to try to increase the high tech workforce, mainly because a few paragraphs in, Margaret Anderson Kelleher, who runs the Minnesota High Tech Association, said by 2020, Minnesota will have to fill an estimated 154,920 high-wage, high-tech jobs. And, you know, they started it off talking about the silver tsunami of baby boomer retirements.
Yeah, I love that. I had never heard this silver tsunami before.
Oh, I have. Oh, God.
Oh, yes. I haven't heard that before.
Okay. Well, but it's happening, and it's already happening like crazy. You know, at the same time, you know, people, Graham Thickens and I, for example, have been going back and forth about these ageism stories from Silicon Valley, specifically the one about the guy that did the port to the Intel chip for OS X, Mac OS X, yeah. Yep. And he couldn't get a job at a Genius Bar.
Nope.
He went and applied and...
There was another good story that I had in the lineup, but we have so many stories that I nixed it. That was also about, you know, very qualified people in Silicon Valley that can't find work.
Right.
And it basically gets at the point that I look at this story, which is, this is just a way for high tech companies here to get lower paid people. I mean, it's, I can't get a job in the market here.
Yeah, but it's always been that way.
I don't think so. I think that ageism is very prevalent now because people work longer. You know, they're working later in life.
Right.
You know, I don't want to retire now, and my in-laws retired, you know, 5 years before my current age. You know?
Really? Wow.
Yes, they did. So our generation, I don't think, wants to go away like the previous generation did early. So I just found this to be kind of an offensive story. This is just a way, just like H-1B visas, to lower the cost for high-tech companies. And they'll just churn through the older people and they'll hire younger people.
Well, here's something interesting, though. So my sister retired, my older sister. And she was doing EDI for Donaldson Company in Bloomington. And they just ground people out. I mean, they just...
EDI. What's EDI?
Electronic...
Data Interchange.
Interchange. Thank you. It's just a way of having your system connect up with suppliers, for example. And because everybody's structure is slightly different, so you got to have ways to exchange data so that, you know, your quantity field equals their quantity field, you know, that kind of thing. But at any rate, so she retires and they end up coming back to her and saying, look, we'd like to bring you back in, you know, if you'd like to come in for a year and all of that, and we'll give you this and we'll give you that and we'll give you, you know, pay you this and so on. And she's like, no, I'm not, I'm done. And it was because, you know, they had basically ground her to a pulp. And so, you know, you look at stuff like that and you look at the fact that now they're sitting there saying, oh, geez, we have nobody here who knows what she knew. And yep. And they need them back. And I know that's happened a lot, especially even in this market. I mean, yeah. I know somebody else that actually listens to this that shall remain nameless, although he'll probably recognize himself. But he had been... you know, with several tech companies and was a fairly high-end IT guy. And he was making about 60,000 more a year than anybody else. And they ended up laying him off and they hired two people instead of, you know, two 30 somethings. And the punchline is that he was the only one that had institutional knowledge about part of the code base. And they were like, oh, geez, we made a huge mistake. And they had to come back to him, and they ended up paying him a huge bonus to come back. And he worked for another year and a half because it was just kind of a no-brainer.
Well, that's good.
But you always wonder about how much stuff walks out the door when somebody retires.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I agree.
We shall see if this STEM pipeline thing works. I don't think it. I mean, I think it will at some point, but boy, it's a ways off.
Well, again, we got a lot of work to do. That's for sure.
Yeah,
we do. Prepare for that sort of.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
the folks at KidBlog are doing a very difficult thing right now. They're trying to switch from freemium. Yeah. They're trying to switch from freemium to paid.
And they lost half their customers.
Oh, poor bastards. I mean, that is such a tough transition. And, you know, we've all grown accustomed to everything being free on the internet, but you know, you got to stop and think, wait, you got to pay for this stuff. Somebody's got to pay these people to do something.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, but actually the more important thing is the fact that education, they have an extraordinarily difficult time getting money for stuff like this.
Oh, exactly.
And they can't pay on a monthly basis. They can't, you know, they can't do subscriptions. They have to allocate the money and buy it and boom it, you know, I've got a friend that is CEO of a small education company, and I don't even want to, just don't even talk to me about stuff. I mean, having pay come in 6 months after you invoice somebody. I mean, come on, seriously? Anyway.
So I've got a solution for them if they're listening.
Yeah.
Ooh, go.
So free service with Pokemon Go ads. It'll go over really big with the kids.
Brilliant.
That or Minecraft, right? Yeah, that or Minecraft.
That's right. Minecraft and Pokemon Go. Got it covered.
Yeah, somehow I don't think the educators would go for ads.
What? Oh, well.
Okay. I really love this company, I really love the concept of KidBlog, and I hope they can make it work.
Me too.
I hope this losing of users is a sort of a temporary thing as people secure funding to actually get back on the platform. So,
yeah. Well, I think they should invest in lobbyists, actually. That would probably be more... be better for them, you know. It is. It's a government thing. You need to get funding, you know.
Yep.
Go to the districts, and
I'm sure they've done their fair share of grant writing and lobbying. So.
Yep.
All right.
But anyway, our friends down in Rochester at Mayo, they're doing this Think Big Challenge, and they have it down to what, 5 finalists, and 2 are actually from inside the state. Right.
That's right.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
That's well, and so for those listening, what it is Mayo has this competition that they started this summer, and they want, you know, innovators and entrepreneurs and businesses to help them develop a go-to-market strategy for one of 4 Mayo MedTech properties. And and so this is interesting that Mayo would open something like this up. Typically they've been pretty closed with respect to, you know, Mayo Medical Ventures and their investments and all that. And it's kind of fun to see them be willing to fling open the doors and let people come in and poke around and figure out a new strategy.
And the award is $50,000 cash prize.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and along with the chance to lead a team at Mayo and license the technology. So that's probably the big one.
That is the big kahuna.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's a segue for you, Steve. Speaking of big kahunas.
Well, I mean, are you talking Apple?
Obviously the biggest tech story from a national perspective is what happened at Apple. September 7th. Hoo-ha.
That's right.
Another rollout of another iPhone 7 and,
The new watch.
Well, the new watch software. I guess it is a new watch.
It is a new watch with a GPS in it.
Yeah. Is that so? Can you guys tell me? Does that? I obviously haven't seen it in person. Does that look thicker to you? Does that watch look thicker to you?
No.
Well, the ceramic one does because the glass for the screen sticks out of it. I think the other ones, the stainless steel and the aluminum, or aluminium, as Johnny would say, I think those look about maybe even a little bit skinnier than the older ones.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. But are either you guys going to upgrade? Just because you're not, I wouldn't say that you're runners.
Well, my wife and I watched the keynote together, and
Apple
during
TV,
that,
God,
I was convinced.
You guys do the most romantic things.
We do.
Let's watch the Apple event.
We do.
Was there wine and cheese?
So we were convinced that we'd each get an iPhone 7 and a new watch after the event. And really? now here we are today, and I have $1,000 in Apple Store credit that's been sitting there.
Oh, burning a hole in your pocket.
And so I'm going to use that to buy her a new phone for her birthday today. And she goes, oh, no, keep that for yourself. You did work for that. And I'm like, nah, let's go get you a phone. Because I realize I don't need a new watch because the new OS update's going to really do what I want it to do. And I'm not sure about the iPhone 7, mainly because I have, Bose noise canceling headphones that are $400 headphones, and also another pair of $80 Bose headphones.
You know, there's an adapter, right?
Yeah, there is an adapter, right, but the last thing I want is another frickin' dongle.
But it's not like it's a huge dongle. It's a little 2-3 inch extension cord.
Yeah, right. But then I've got the thing hanging off the Bose noise canceling headphones. It's a little rectangle, thin, but I've got that hanging off. So it's just not something I want to do. But anyway, how about you, Phil? You gonna upgrade? Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about switching back to Android for a while, simply because I'm kind of curious about the HTC phone. Built Nexus, which will probably be called the Pixel. Is that that's the rumor?
No, they're going to drop. They're dropping the Nexus brand, so I don't know what they're going to call.
Okay.
No, I think it wasn't it Pixel. Isn't that that's what they're trying to rename things?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, and then the big controversy, of course, was the dropping of the headphone jack, which everybody anticipated.
Why is that a big story?
It's just really not that big a deal to me.
No.
Well, it's a big deal because, so for example, my daughter, who of course worked at the Apple Store for 5 years, is live texting Michelle and I during the event because she's watching it too. She's out in LA and she found an apartment, by the way.
Yay!
And right away, which is awesome. But anyway, so she's live texting the event texting to us. And she said she was just so disappointed and mad that they did away with it. She goes, how am I going to listen to it in my car and charge at the same time? And it's like, honey, they're going to have, she doesn't have Bluetooth in her. She's got an older SUV. They've got, Belkin already
has something.
That can do it. Yep. So it's not a big deal, but, that was a huge controversy. But then I pointed out to people, hey, how many floppy disks do you use now? That was a huge controversy when Jobs dropped the floppy in the iMac. And
what? They're not making the floppy anymore? What?
And how many of you miss having a CD DVD drive in your computer?
I do. That's why I have one.
Well, I own one too, but I don't use it that much.
Yeah, it becomes handy when you need it, though.
This is true.
I got to say. So I think that, what they announced, it was about the same. The new 7 looks good. If you're a photographer, that 7 Plus with a dual camera thing, that looks like a really good upgrade. I really like the wireless headphones. I think that's, even though it looks a little weird with this really long handle that sticks out, the idea is really good.
Yeah.
So, they're going to sell a lot of these. I don't think, people are saying that's peaked, it's whatever.
No,
they're going to sell a ton of these things.
Yeah, they will sell a lot of them. The look alone. Again, Apple has got the dead sexy stuff down. I mean, that black, all black iPhone is sweet looking. It really
is. But I think we buried the lead. The biggest thing to come out of the event was Pokemon Go
and Mario. Yeah.
Well, for the Apple Watch, though, Pokemon Go, come on. That is.
Oh, Steve.
You could get a Snorlax. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Are you playing Pokemon Go now?
No, I think it's a terrible terrible distraction.
Well, we have one more story we got to get to because we got to bring our guest on, my friends.
Yes, okay. We do.
We have a guest today, everyone.
Yes,
but,
we do.
Fitbit, besides the iPhone 7 now, big deal, it's going to be water resistant down to 50 meters, which is quite a ways.
I suppose.
Well, it is.
You know, when you're 50 meters underwater, the first thing you're worried about is, what's my heart rate?
Well, but you think how about many, you know, safe
steps,
scuba diving sport how limits
how
is
many
150
steps
feet.
Have I gone down here?
No, it's strokes.
Yeah.
You go on all of these, whether it's the Fitbit or the Apple Watch or the Pebble or whatever, you in the app, you say, I'm swimming, and then it counts your strokes.
But, dude, you're not swimming at 50 meters underwater. Trust me, you're not flopping your arms.
Yeah, you are if you're you know, scuba diving.
Nope. When you scuba dive, you don't use your arms.
I do.
Well, you shouldn't.
Oh, brother.
Your arms should be at your side, stud.
Oh, okay, mister. Well, what do you do with your spear?
Spear? You shouldn't be carrying a spear.
So, as a Fitbit customer, I think these are good upgrades.
Great.
Okay.
I like the Charge 2. Charge 2 looks good. My Charge, the materials, the band, it just broke after about 9 months, and they sent me another one. And I ended up getting an Alta, which is one that actually looks similar to the Flex 2 here, except it has a screen. Mm-hmm. But it has the ability to change your band, but also it's made from better materials. So it seems like a better deal. It does look a little girly, I have to say. So if I don't get a Pebble, one of the new ones that's coming out later this year, I may get a Charge 2 because it addresses all my issues as far as being able to swap bands. It has heart rate monitor. It's got a larger screen than the Alta does. Mm-hmm. So I could see myself getting one of these. It's what, $150? Yeah, $150. Yeah. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's no Apple Watch 2.0.
That's so it's true. Either this or the Pebble 2 for me. Those are the two.
Okay.
Yeah. Very nice.
Let's bring on our guest because he's waiting in the wings. And
waiting in the wings, you say?
We have wings.
His name is Mark Wilkie. He's the chief technology officer of Who's Driving, among other things, right?
Right. Mark, I've known Mark for quite a few years. Mark was the CTO at BuzzFeed, the CTO at BuzzFeed that was instrumental in getting the office open here and working with HyperIQ. And then he left there earlier this year and started working. He moved back from New York and with his family and is now working on pushing the Who's Driving app out the door, and they just released 2 weeks ago, I believe it was. And so let's catch up with Mark and see what's going on with Who's Driving.
Sounds great.
Who is driving, by the way?
We'll just wait for him to join.
Oh boy, not again.
Yeah. Well, this is not, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, but this is just not a,
not ready for prime time.
Did you add him or just send him a link?
I added him and then I just emailed him a link again separately. So I did an invite because I thought that would automatically call him.
There he is.
Mark, how are you? Steve Borsch here.
Good morning, all. I'm going to disable my video.
Oh, you look stunning this morning, Mark.
Thank you. I feel stunning. Thank you, Phil.
So we kind of introduced you, and of course we have Tim Elliott on and Flip Wilson, or Phil Wilson. I mean, isn't that your name, Phil? Yeah.
You have to be old enough to get that joke.
Yeah, though. You really do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Mark is a young man. He doesn't get that.
No, yeah, I don't get that.
Okay, yeah. All right.
I get it all too well. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Sound great.
Mark, congratulations on the release of the app, which has been in market now for three weeks?
Since the 23rd, I think.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah,
very
nice. We're super excited.
But Mark, before we start, Phil, I have to ask you a very important question, Mark.
Oh, no.
Sure.
On your Twitter page, it says, the tagline says, I make software and host disco-themed birthday parties for seniors.
Yep.
Okay. Is that true? I was going to give you, I was going to tease you, but then I thought, well, maybe he actually does.
Yeah, I feel like that's a little hurtful. That's my side job, and that's where I make my real money.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's my passion. It's my passion, really.
I didn't want to be insensitive, so I...
Yeah, he moved on from water aerobics for seniors. I might, the disco parties.
I might have to leave this podcast. I'm a little offended. I have to
Wow. Trigger warning.
Well, listen, Steve, first tell us a little bit about the Who's Driving app. Did you give us the rundown of what it does? And then I have a couple of questions for you. So
sure. Yeah.
Tell us about
Who's Driving. I can give you a little bit of the history. So Paul Kramer and Ann Kramer, longtime friends of mine, I've known them probably pushing 30 years now. And Paul started a company here in Minneapolis called Barometer. He sold it a little while ago. And his wife Ann worked at Style Architects. But she's a mom, and she did a lot of carpooling, and she was looking around for apps to help her manage carpool, and there was really nothing that she found compelling. So she was like, "We should build this ourselves." And you know, since Paul's kind of a tech guy and has started a tech company, like, "Oh, this seems like a interesting idea." And I kind of had the same thought when they talked with me about the idea of Who's Driving, which is obviously the carpooling problem is, you know, the problem domain isn't that complex, right? I mean, in some ways it can be, but in general, if you just think about it as an app, it's like, oh, carpooling. But really, like for me, I just thought, you know, this seems like a perfect problem for mobile technology to solve, right? Like really, because carpooling is so much about communication and simplifying how people interact. And that was really where Anne was kind of living, where she was like frustrated with how she had to deal with carpools, which is like spreadsheets and emails and texting different
bullets
people.
And boards with pieces of paper.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially like I say that morning, all of a sudden you have to have an emergency root canal and you can't drive, frantically trying to figure out the best way to contact everybody in the carpool, find somebody else, right? So it really just seemed like, oh, leveraging mobile technology with SMS and SNS and push, and it just seemed like, oh, this is a perfect, you know, platform for the solution. And there wasn't really anybody doing anything out there that was really compelling at that time. So you know, and I kind of sat in the back burner then for a while, and then Paul invested some money. I assume you guys are familiar with LiveFront, that Paul started working with LiveFront, and they started building, you know, like an alpha version of iOS for them. And then unfortunately that kind of got put on hold for a while for different reasons. Paul was selling his business. They got distracted by other things. And then eventually when they started coming back to it, I started talking with Paul about the possibility of becoming an advisor for Who's Driving. Cause I was actually living in New York, still working for BuzzFeed at the time. But then things at BuzzFeed started to change, and I was thinking about leaving, and my wife is from Minnesota, so we thought about coming back. And then Paul and I started talking more seriously about maybe having me come work for Who's Driving after, once I was back in Minnesota. So I realize that's a really exciting story, but,
no, it wasn't like I went off to war, served two
years. Yeah, exactly.
Back.
Yeah,
that's no, right. Saved my entire platoon. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. But
no, it's still. So I started working with them, and really, I mean, I think really officially, I probably started with Who's Driving in May or June, right? Is when we kind of when Paul got a round of angel funding, and we really kind of started working in earnest again, and we've kind of picked up where LiveFront left off, and I built a team in town here and started working and iterating and got the first releases out. Now, let me say this, you know, LiveFront, those guys are awesome, right? They're amazing. You know, I worked with a lot of consulting companies in my day, and, you know, there's the good and the bad, and LiveFront is definitely the good of those, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, for us, yeah, they're great. I mean, for us as a small company, it really becomes a question of cost more than anything, right? And, you know, also, obviously, we want to own our own code and we want to own our own process and all that. But so we've kind of been, like, for the past few months, working with LiveFront, but really transitioning and building our own team here in Minneapolis, and actually we've been working with a lot of remote developers too. So it's pretty exciting.
Well, Teo, having lived in Chicago and now with a daughter in Los Angeles, and also being aware of what the Minnesota Department of Transportation has projected for traffic in the metro area here, and the fact that there's just not enough money to pay for enough infrastructure. Forget about autonomous cars and everything else. There's going to have to be a lot of carpooling. Otherwise, none of us are going to get anywhere.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, I think, you know, we did a lot of research just looking at demographics, who carpools and where. I think the obviously the bulk of it is going to be parents driving kids, right? Which is where we're focusing right now. You know, there is a market for commuters. I mean, you can see like the Google is implementing that with Waze out in California, right? Where you can do rideshare and that sort of thing. But really, when we were looking at the numbers, rideshare is interesting, but for carpooling, it's you know, parents driving kids is the majority of it, right? And it's not that we don't want to do ride sharing, because we do, for sure. I mean, I think it's important that people do it. I used to do it. But for now, our focus is on parents, just because that's where the majority of the carpooling happens right now. Yeah.
So there are a couple of carpooling apps out there. There are more than a couple, I'm sure. But
I mean, like on the Android store, there's a ton, right?
So is there do you see that the Who's Driving app has a special sauce that really separates you from those your competitors? Or, you know, what do you feel is what is the driving piece that makes the Who's Driving thing better?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. I think one is that I feel like we are, one of our advantages, the hope is that we can execute on a technical and a product level better and faster than most. I mean, we've got a lot of experience doing that. And you know, hopefully I'm good at building good teams that can execute. So I think the way Paul, our CTO, would say it, we have the ability to scale on a technical level that a lot of people will struggle with. You know, a lot of the companies that we looked at are doing carpooling. They tend to be like a mom who's hired a company to build for her, that kind of thing. So I think one of our big advantages is that we know how to build great software, you know, mm-hmm. We know how to execute. And we, you know, our thinking and my thinking from the beginning is like, for carpooling in an app to work, it has to be painfully frictionless. It has to be easy to use. You know, we're dealing with, you know, even like initially since launch, you realize that our user demographic is a lot, oddly enough, a lot different than the BuzzFeed user demographic, right?
So, yes, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
But so I think there is some people who aren't quite as technically savvy as younger people who are doing carpooling. So like we realize that, the analogy I always use is that the Waze app, right? The first time I used the Waze app, and I was living in New York and I was commuting to Long Island, you know, commuting to Long Island on the week, not commuting, I was like driving out there the weekend, I have family out there. And a Sunday afternoon commute in the summer on the way back or a drive back is, it can be a nightmare, right? You get behind the wrong traffic jam, you lose an hour, right? And right. I started using the Waze and all of a sudden I stopped losing that hour, right? I mean, there was still traffic, but I never got into those horrible, oh, now an hour drive has become 2.5 hours, right? And it changed my life. I was like, Waze is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And anybody ever who would listen to me, which isn't a lot of people, I'd be like, use Waze, right? Waze is great. You know, like it was everything I ever wanted in GPS, right? Which is like, it's going to route me around this horrible New York traffic. And what I keep saying about Who's Driving, it has to be similar, where it has to be so frictionless and simple and make everybody's, you know, if I'm doing carpooling, this has got to be an exponentially better way to do it, which we believe it will be, right?
Well, can I ask a question? Because I was looking at the how-tos on your website.
Yep, yep.
And just to get a little bit of a feel for the connections and all of that. And I immediately went to a place where, you know, I have a social graph and I would have my own trusted circle.
Yep.
And it would be great, you know, if there's somebody across the street with kids to be able to connect to their trusted circle if I trust them, right? Yep. And so now I've expanded my social graph for potential carpooling.
You're saying like a 6 degrees of carpooling kind
Correct.
Of thing.
And is that something that you guys are looking at for the future?
Yes, very much so. I mean, I think this is an interesting problem and as we've released the app and start working with our users, we realize like this whole concept of trusted drivers and how you get to see people's kids and share kids. It's, you know, it's an interesting problem because it's both, you want it to be simple to use and I want to be able to see your kids and set them up in carpools, but there's also a question of security there. So how do we manage mm-hmm. people feeling like my kids are safe and we're in a trusted environment, but also the ease of access to being able to set up carpools. So I feel like, and you know, so our current version of the app, right? I think we released pretty early, right? There's definitely features and big pieces that we're actually working on right now. But I think the decision was made. I think it's the right decision is to release an MVP, knowing that it's going to need to evolve, but getting it in the hands of our users and getting feedback. And that's definitely some of the feedback that we've been getting, which is like some people are just confused about how that's supposed to work. Some people feel it's too strict, right? So, I mean, The thing that I love about working with software is when it's actually out there in people's hands, right? So now we're getting a lot of great feedback. And like our goal for this launch, at least my goal from the technology side, is really about getting a core group of users that are engaged, that are using the app, that are giving us feedback, right? And we learned this at BuzzFeed with apps. And I think BuzzFeed's gotten really good at it, but it's something that in the early days we weren't doing, which was, you know, building a beta user base, engaging users very aggressively. So anytime someone reaches out to us, we follow up with them and we try to pull them into our beta program, you know, because I realized like that those are the users that really matter. Those are the users that are going to help us evolve the app and grow. Mm-hmm. Right. So right now, really, like what I keep saying to people internally, like right now it's kind of a slow burn for us because we really want to leverage our user base to make the best app, right? It's really hard to build a great app that isn't in the ecosystem, right? Like you right. have to get feedback. You have to, I mean, that's really how you make it great. So some of this, and that's what's been nice about to get back at the trusted driver stuff is like, we're getting feedback from people like you, which is like, oh, you know, couldn't this be work this way or this, I don't, and part of it's just some of the things that people don't understand. And, you know, it's like that thing when you've been working on an app for 6 months, you understand it so well. Right. And there's certain pieces that you realize like, oh, this experience isn't actually as good as we think it is. And we're so comfortable with it because we know it. Right. So getting users to touch it and feel it is really the way to find out like, oh, our assumptions are wrong. And you know, the thing that they always said, probably still say or they said at BuzzFeed was it's art and science. Right. Which is like we have a certain hunch about how the certain feature is going to work or this is going to do this way. So we implement it. But really, it's the data that we get back from that is what helps us make the decision if our hunch is right or wrong. Right. So we're very much looking at it, at that approach at Who's Driving as well, which is like get feedback from the users, use the app. And again, the trusted drivers is a really great example of this is how are people using trusted driver? What's making sense? What's not making sense? Okay. Let's reevaluate and try B, try C, and then, you know, start A/B testing certain things and start, you know, so hopefully we'll make that experience, you know, awesome, right? I mean, that's really the end goal is how can we make the app awesome? And I feel like that's definitely one big piece to that, right?
Mark, you know, I had a question for you. You know, shortly after you gave myself and my team the opportunity to be part of BuzzFeed, you know, we were building apps and releasing apps.
Phil, just to be clear, you know, it was you guys that pushed me out, right?
That's it.
I think we made a horrible mistake.
Oh, he's kind of a mercenary.
What did we do? Yeah. But you know, it had that experience going from releasing apps as a smaller company or releasing apps for smaller companies and going to, you know, BuzzFeed when a release, for example, when we put the news app out, I mean, we watched these numbers, these download numbers climb right. so insanely fast because we had that BuzzFeed platform to really be the pulpit. And we obviously as BuzzFeed get a lot of press, that sort of thing. Now you've leveraged quite a bit of press yourself. I mean, hey, you're on the Minute of Eight Gang podcast, but
once this goes live, forget it.
Forget it. What is that like? Because I went, you know, went the other way. Went from releasing small to releasing big. Now you're releasing. You've gone from releasing big many times in BuzzFeed yep. to releasing small. Tell me about that. I mean,
it's a good question, and I think it's funny in the context of BuzzFeed, right? Where the tech team grew, there was a period where the tech team grew very quickly and it's when our traffic was at very large levels, right? And then we started building new apps and releasing them. So we ran into the situation where we started working with engineers who really hadn't released apps into an ecosystem like that, where they all of a sudden there was going to be a million users, right? So one of the problems was just getting people to think about scale in that way, right? But usually they weren't used to it. So the thing we started to run into a lot where it's like, here's an app, it's getting ready to deploy. And then we would like do some testing and load testing and scaling. And they'd be like, oh, this isn't going to work at all, right?
This isn't going to work,
We'd have to go back. And I mean, it's, you know, it's obviously, it's a learning experience. It's a training thing. And it's you know, as an engineering organization grows, like we were growing very quickly and acquiring a lot of engineers, it's like making sure that everybody's building things in a certain way for that kind of scale. Now, on the other half, now at Who's Driving, like I find myself, I'm having to stop because I keep thinking in terms of BuzzFeed scale and we're not at that scale, right? So. Right. Like I have to stop thinking that way, which is like, oh, okay, I'm over optimizing everything from a perspective that I don't need to, right? So I got to pull back and be like, okay, I got to, you know, we have good engineers, trust they're doing the right things and like they're doing the right things for the scale that we're at now and in the immediate future, right? I mean, the funny thing about all this, and I keep saying this, I think a lot of people are getting annoyed at me because I'm the old man, but working at BuzzFeed and companies before that, the kind of effort that we had to put in for infrastructure, you know, and BuzzFeed started in 2006, right, was astronomical compared to what we do today, right? Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine last night at dinner. It's like at BuzzFeed, when we were like, we want to start collecting data. Well, this was like 2007-ish, you know, it wasn't like we could just plug into Mixpanel, you know, and start collecting data. We built out our data collection infrastructure on Amazon. That was very new, right? That was a Herculean effort for us. You know, we were a team of four guys trying to build data analytics tools. And some of those tools, there's still remnants of them in BuzzFeed code today, which I think they're valiantly trying to destroy, which makes sense. You know, I mean, they're iterating and moving on from that. But back then, like we just the data infrastructure alone was so huge, but all these other just small things, continuous integration, like we would spend a lot of time and energy implementing tools like Jenkins and like who's driving. Literally, I went to Circle CI. I plugged in our Android Git repo. Circle pulled the repo, ran the test, and they passed the first time. Right? If I could get all the time back we spent trying to get our Android test to run in Jenkins in the early days, or it was Hudson back then, right?
Right.
I'd be a rich man, you know. And today, I literally pushed one button, you know, authenticated, and then the test passed. Right? Like that's. You know, the tools are a lot better now, I guess. And you know, there's a lot more experience. And I mean, obviously there's other hard problems, but I don't spend, you know, hours trying to get CI to working. I spend minutes, which is kind of amazing. Right. And then there's so many great, like I said, we mix panel and New Relic, all these great tools that we can just plug in through Heroku. Right. It's literally like, I haven't thought about infrastructure really at all, except for we need to set up some new dynos for our rail server. You know, and there's something really satisfying about that, right?
Yep. Yep. That's great. I think that you need a t-shirt that says, I push the button and the test passed. I think that's a great t-shirt.
Right, yeah. There. Or like, yeah. Lead button pusher. I think
lead button pusher. That's what it is. Well, listen, we probably ought to wrap up with you and let you get on with your day, but thanks very much for taking some time.
Yeah. Mark, no kidding.
Always love talking to you. And
no, that's great. So when does this podcast go live?
This afternoon.
Nice, exciting. All right.
So you'll be there, baby.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys.
You betcha.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Hey, good luck.
So
fun.
It's what I love about Mark is he's a brilliant engineer, a brilliant developer. He's a great architect. And usually those guys are very quiet. Mark is not
yeah. like that. And that's why he was a CTO, because he can communicate.
Yes.
You know, a lot of I've known a few, like Jamie Thingelstead is that way.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Doug,
exactly.
Doug Olson, you know, who's with Microsoft. He's that way. And, you know, just good, incredibly techie, very visionary, and they can actually talk to normal humans.
Yep. Yep.
So that's great.
So let's get on with our cool thing of the week real quick.
Yes.
We've just droned on. So, Tim, you're first.
Okay, one of the things that I really liked at the Apple event was the Nintendo portion near the beginning. And Super Mario Run looks like a really fun game that's coming out for iOS. And I have to think that since they're teaming up with Nintendo,
you're going
to
see more.
We're going to see a lot more, including their back catalog, which I hope to be able to play on my Apple TV. So we'll see.
It should be fun. Nice.
Yes,
very nice. Did you notice they got to Super Mario really quick? Usually they spend a little more time on the numbers and how many, you know, they kind of glossed over that this time. So
yeah.
Super Mario.
I mean, they had a lot of announcements, you know, really. And so they packed it right into that 2 hours. But it was good to see Miyamoto on the stage there introducing Super Mario. And it looks like a fantastic game.
Steve, you want to go next? You want me to?
No, I'll go next because yours is more important than anything. And
right. Maybe the best for last.
Yeah. So mine is it's an Internet of Things play. It's called Estimote, and what it is basically is it's beacons. They have these little tiny beacons that you can stick anywhere. And it works with Apple's iBeacons and so on. And they have, I think, made a huge breakthrough. One is they've extended the range of these beacons to 200 meters. And they also have a new API that allows you to store data in the beacon's memory. So if you want to have, you know, a hunt And you go find a prize if you get close to the beacon, you know, like a Pokemon Go kind of thing. It can do that, or you want to give advertising messages, or you want to make product recommendations or whatever. The beacons are there, but they can actually store the data inside the beacon, so they don't have to go up to the cloud to get more new information and so forth. And I think it's pretty fascinating. And they have iOS and Android SDKs, software development kits, so they can you know, easily incorporate these beacons into your apps. And I think we're going to see some pretty fun stuff coming out with beacon use.
These are crazy looking too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
They come in colors. They have these little stickers too. Yeah,
you can stick on stuff.
Right.
Yeah. 10 stickers for 99 or 3 beacons for 99.
Well, actually, I wish I had had one of these, because it would have been really great to know when there was any movement with my boss's chair. So when he came back, he could have a beacon under his chair, so everyone with a smartphone would know when he had come back and sat down in his chair. Because it would have
had,
would move.
You would have had to invent a smartphone too. So at that time,
that's right. Yeah. But well, there's that.
There's that. All right. Phil. The most important thing. This one leapt off Reddit to me. The smart urinal.
It's a urinal with a bidet in it.
Well, but I think this is. It's got. You know, it washes you. I don't know if there's any cupping or cradling, but there is washing, and then there is drying. And I quite frankly can't see myself spending that much time in front of your hilarious.
It does look hilarious. But you know what? Plus the fact I could just see myself wearing a pair of khaki pants and having this thing start to spray, you know, and to clean you. And it's just like, come on.
I can also see people spending far too much time in front of the urinal.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm going to run. Let's run through that again.
You know what? You know what's interesting is the fact that, you know, my wife obviously travels a ton. And, you know, people in Europe, specifically France, think that we are in the United States so incredibly backwards because bidets are not normal fixtures in bathrooms. And the Japanese feel that way too. You know, that
I see what you did there. Backwards and bidet. I got it.
That's right.
Thank you.
Clever.
Thank you.
Nice.
All right. Up to upcoming events. We updated the mini demo 24.
Yeah, it's
the
21st.
Thank you, Tim.
You were wrong last time.
I was wrong. Absolutely wrong. Okay.
Yep.
And then the film documentary film release is going to be on September 22nd at 7 p.m. at the McNamara Alumni Center at the U of M after the Minnesota Cup Awards. Yep. And you can get tickets, and I've got a link here.
Yep.
And so that's the film is really looking pretty interesting.
Yep.
So.
And I also added on the 13th of September, which is coming up this week, the Connect Ed Day.
Good.
Kind of talks, sort of celebrates the Connect Ed initiative that the Obama administration has done for, I think it's like 3 years old. So check that out.
Yeah.
From futureready.org.
That sounds good.
So good stuff going on. And so we'll check those events out next week. And then I bet we'll talk about them next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care.